Red Line.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and its weekend program, The Red Line, with me, Andrew Kripko.
And Sergei Strokin.
Welcome to today's program, and this is what we want to highlight as the news-breaking stories of the week that proved to be extremely tense, dramatic, and controversial. Vladivostok, Russia's gateway to Asia. Russia's far eastern port city of Vladivostok hosted the second Eastern Economic Forum, seen as a brainstorming session for Asian policymakers and businessmen in giving new steam to Moscow's integration into the Pacific locomotive of global growth. Euphrates Shield. Is it a sword against the Kurds? Turkish troops launched a major offensive in northern Syria dubbed Euphrates Shield, which sparked a fresh controversy with the U.S. because of its aim to crush the Kurds, the same rebels that Washington views as its most trusted on-the-ground coalition ally in Syria. And also, John Kerry testing the spices of South Asia. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry paid a wrap-up trip to South Asia, visiting Bangladesh and India on a delicate mission to boost anti-terrorist and economic cooperation with both nations, while also trying hard to avoid any overt anti-Chinese symbolism in his outreaches. So let us come to our first section, Beyond the Headlines, and speak about the exciting summit in Vladivostok. Russia's far eastern port city of Vladivostok hosted the second Eastern Economic Forum, seen as a brainstorming session for Asian policymakers and businessmen in giving new steam to Moscow's integration into the Pacific locomotive of global growth. President Putin decided to make the September summit a yearly event after its inaugural success last year, and the gathering has since served to remind everyone in the region that Russia is indeed a Pacific player. While boasting nowhere near the economic prowess in this part of the world as its Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and other partners do, Moscow has sought to transform this disadvantage into an opportunity by actively courting millions of dollars of new investment into the Far East infrastructure and other related projects.
Andrew, I think that Vladivostok Forum is a textbook example of how domestic priorities are overlapping with foreign policy agenda. Because it's an open secret that the development of the Far East is one of Russia's priority, and this is domestic issue. But at the same time, we've seen an esteemed gathering of high-ranking representatives from leading Asia-Pacific nations. So this is a rostrum, this is a springboard for developing, discussing not only economic issues, but also the issues of security and political settlement in the vast Asia-Pacific region. I think we have to start from explaining to our audience that the name of Vladivostok, because this is a hub, Far Eastern hub. So in Russian, Vladivostok means master of the East. This is translation from Russian. And I think the name is very telling in itself, because Vladivostok is a place where you can really discuss, you can talk business, you can make deals, and you can work out the blueprint for future cooperation. And this is actually what we've seen these days also, because this is the second Vladivostok Economic Forum. The first experience we've seen last year. You are well aware that in the world there are tens and tens of forums. Most of them are stillborn. But this is not the case, of course, with Vladivostok, because this is fast growing and this is huge. And finally, this is two-way traffic, because Russia badly needs investments. And at the same time, investors look at Far East as Russia's new Klondike.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely an exciting time, and I remember being there last year, how active the atmosphere was and how everyone was just very eager to
Fantastic.
Meet. And I'm glad that they're continuing this. So we're going to be discussing this topic today by beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Alexey Voskresensky. He's dean at the School of Political Affairs at MGIMO University and editor-in-chief of Comparative Politics magazine. Hello, Mr. Voskresensky. How
Hello,
are you this morning?
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, thank you for coming. You know, I wanted to ask you about how successful you think Russia's new political economic course has been in the East, and what promises do you think it still holds out to be met?
Well, I think it's still the starting of the whole thing. Russia have difficulties over the years to develop Siberia and Russian Far East. But now it's clear for everybody that there is a state behind it, and the interest of the state and the will of the state to develop Russian part of Far East and Siberia is very serious. And that's very important. I have here the program of the forum, and I looked through it very carefully, and there are many themes that are of the great interest concerning transport corridors, investment, agro-industrial complex between Russia and China, development of the islands, development of the advanced territories, etc., etc. I think it's very promising, but it will be a long way to develop all this.
Absolutely. Just as a follow-up to say, Mr. Voskresensky, it's an open secret that we have underdeveloped infrastructure there, and the statistic is quite dramatic, because it's just something more than 6 million of Russians who are living in an area which is, can you imagine, larger than India, and by the way, it shares common borders with China. But at the same time, it is lavishly rich in mineral resources. So we have the gold, titanium, rare earth metals, coal, hydrocarbons, and this can turn this underdeveloped region into a major export center of Asia-Pacific.
Yeah, well, actually, when we talk about this, Sergey, and I'd like to ask you this, Mr. Voskresensky, is, you know, Russia's courting investment primarily from China, Japan, and South Korea, even though there are, of course, other partners involved. Do you think that the Far East could serve as almost, in the future, a political meeting ground between these three countries of Northeast Asia? And
oh, it's quite possible. I think it was. There were many plans before, and this is probably the right time to realize it, because everybody understands that, especially Eastern Asia, will be a center of the geopolitical development for the next decade. And if you look at the northern part of Eastern Asia, it's stuck, mostly because the interest of different participants that may play their role in the development of the Far East generally and Russian Far East particularly are not clearly understood by everybody.
General, I think another striking point, if we compare this year's forum with what we've seen last year, is that last year there was a lot of talk that that was a Chinese show, because there was a Chinese dominance, big Chinese delegation.
Oh, no. Now there are many players.
That's what I'm saying. This time it's totally different, because we have Prime Minister Abe from Japan. We have South Korean president.
Oh, that's a new turn in Eastern Asia, because Eastern Asia is much more multilateral now than before, and it's not understood even by the experts.
And all of them are cutting corners to come to Vladivostok.
Yeah. This is definitely pretty interesting, and that's why we actually have an East Asian guest on the line with us right now, and that's Mr. Brian Young. He's an independent geopolitical analyst.
Red Line.
Hello, Brian. How are you today?
Hi, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to host you. Thank you very much for deciding to come on. You know, I wanted to ask you about how the Russian Far East is seen in Asia. I mean, what kind of opportunities do the Chinese see, Japanese see, and South Koreans see? And what kind of plans do you think they have for actually tapping into these opportunities and making them something tangible?
You know, it's like, actually, I was in Vladivostok like last month. So you see, so I also interviewed some of the investors. And then like, for the Chinese investor in particular, they are interested in several sectors, including agriculture. Because like at the Eastern Economic Forum, China and Russia announced a new agricultural fund, which is like kind of like, well, if I'm not mistaken, it's around billions dollars. So which is quite big. So it's like one of the momentum between China and Russia. And the second one is like I talked to a Chinese investor who invests in a gambling firm. It's Promonsky Christ. So basically, it's like the property itself is seen as quite profitable because of the tourists from China. So actually, for Chinese investors, especially in the Far East, because like we are labor. So one of the selling points on cutting edge is that actually the Chinese investors, they want to attract the Chinese capital, like Chinese tourists, in the Far East, because it gives them the proximity to the country and the region as well.
Brian, let me ask you about Chinese participation and Chinese role this year, because there was a bit of a controversy here. Some were saying that while we are having a Japanese leader and president of South Korea, there's no high-ranking representatives from China. So some experts were quick to interpret it as if China is losing interest in that. So how credible are those comments?
I think it's just more like for Japan and Russia in particular, it attract more discussion because it's more like a groundbreaking. Just like Russia and Japan still haven't really signed treaty after the Second World War. So I think it's just more newsworthy. People talk about it. But between like the talk between China and Russia is ongoing. So basically it's like it's getting less exciting, but it's still happening. For example, as I said, at Eastern Economic Forum, they are going to launch a new agricultural fund between China and Russia. So I still think like the The talk is still there, the interest is still there, but of course, like the media is seen, focus more on something new and something like more groundbreaking, like Japan. So that's why they have more like attention. That's my take.
Okay, well, Brian, thank you very much for filling us in on these details and clarifying all that talk about Japan and China and so on and so forth. But right now, we're going to have to move on, and we want to thank you again for appearing on our show. Thank you, Brian.
Red Line.
And right now, we're going to invite another guest onto our program, and that's Mr. Alexander Lomonov. He's head research fellow at the Institute of Far Eastern Studies at the Russian Academy of Sciences. Okay, Mr. Lomonov, the Far East is in urgent need of economic development, and Moscow is unable to do this on its own at the pace that's needed. So what sorts of projects and initiatives do you think should happen in order to make the region an important component of the Asia-Pacific community? And how will the Eastern Economic Forum facilitate this?
Well, I think that though you are right that currently Russia doesn't have enough of economic or industrial resources to develop Far East, the beginning of changes should start from inside Russia's system of bureaucracy, because it would be very important to streamline procedures of investment or building new enterprises. And in case all these kinds of bureaucratic hurdles would be eased or would be demolished, then it would be much easier to attract both foreign and domestic capital for the development of Far East. Of course, it's also important to create some preferences which will not be tantamount to some kind of money squeezing. There should be real preferences in taxes and in providing land, spaces, infrastructure for would-be investors. And, of course, the forum which you mentioned is very important because Russia needs international cooperation in developing this region. Primary candidate for investing, for developing, is still China as the biggest economy of the region and second greatest economy of the world. But of course, there is also potential for South Korean, Japanese, or even other countries of Southeast Asia, which are getting richer. It could be even, of course, in a smaller scale, but there is potential even for small investments from Vietnam, from other countries of the regions. But of course, China is number one, and Korea and Japan are number two and number three candidates.
Okay, yeah, I'd actually like to ask you about those number two and number three candidates. If you could maybe expand a bit on some proposals, ideas, or maybe some just plans that are in the works for how Russia could improve its economic ties with nearby South Korea and Japan. I know there was some speculative talk for the past couple of years about maybe a railroad to South Korea. Of course, North Korea is the obstacle there, but also an energy network from the Russian Far East to Japan. So how feasible are these ideas, and what other proposals could be on the table?
Well, it's easy to judge about it from the overall economic situation. The investments into traditional industries of Russian economy like oil and gas are not so lucrative anymore because of extremely low prices for raw materials and hydrocarbons on international markets. You're absolutely right that infrastructure projects between Russia and South Korea are now stalled because of the problems in between North Korea and South Korea. And the greatest problem is that the myth or illusion of inflow of Japanese investments is closely intertwined with the problem of so-called territorial issue. You know that Japanese has a claim for four of islands of South Korea. And it's partly a political myth generated by the Japanese side that in case Russia gives up these contested islands, there'll be a huge inflow of Japanese investments. Me personally, I don't believe in this myth because Russia has no territorial problems with South Korea, with China and many other countries, but there is no huge inflow of investment from any other country, rich country like Australia, like Canada, with these countries, Russia has no territorial disputes at all. In the case of South Korea, there is a new dimension of it. It's a problem of theater ballistic missile defense, which severely tends political relations between Seoul and Beijing and Moscow. So that's why it's also a kind of political motivation for South Korea to demonstrate its friendly attitude towards Russia, to say that they want to invest, that they want to contribute to Russia's development in order to ease tensions that which have aroused after the announcement of would-be placement of American anti-ballistic missiles in South Korea, because those missiles, those systems are viewed as a threat both by Russia and China.
Okay, Mr. Lomonov, thanks for sharing your expert views with us on this. They were very comprehensive. Thank you. Okay, Sergey, you know, to wrap everything up, I think that we all agree that this is a very exciting time. This is the beginning of something new. As our in-studio guest, Mr. Voskresensky, said, we have a lot of ways to go, but I think we're off to a pretty solid start, and that we need to always watch every September to see what happens with the Eastern Economic Forum that year.
I think the good news is that Russia's Far East is becoming a crowded place, and it's good because initially we believed that it is a dilapidated, abandoned place. So this is not the case anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in it.
And what is very important, it's always now will be within the news, the world news.
Yes, you're right about that. And now that the eyes are on Vladivostok, hopefully it'll give it a new impetus for Hanshin investment and so on and so forth. So we're going to thank everyone for participating, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Alexei Voskresensky. He's dean at the School of Political Affairs at MGIMO University and editor-in-chief of Comparative Politics magazine. We also spoke to Mr. Brian Young, an independent geopolitical analyst, and also Mr. Alexander Lomonov, head research fellow at the Institute of Far Eastern Studies at the Russian Academy of Sciences. Following in our program, we have Euphrates Shield. Is it a sword against the Kurds? And John Kerry, testing the spices of South Asia.